Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Howdy, folks. That was the voice of Brian Brown, of course, our progenitor, the inventor of the Brown Briefly. And as I was listening to his voice, I was looking fondly up at my wall with the pennant of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Ebbets Field, which up on the wall that Sheila was kind enough to send my way. I'm very fond of that. It's probably older than I am, which is really something. Anyway, welcome to the Brown Briefly on this Tuesday, the day before the night of the debates. This is going to be interesting. The first of the three debates, yes, they'll be at loggerheads. And to help us discern all of these things, we have the Fab Five. Most of us are at home right now, but we have the indefatigable, illustrious, and indivisible Kevin Jones phoning in from, zooming in from his place. Kevin, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to be here. You know, I was just showing, if you're on Zoom with us, you're not, but if you were, you'd see the 50 postcards that we're ready to send off to Pennsylvania, which is a key state right now. And then my collection of blank postcards is now numbering about 700 here. I expect to write at least that number between now and mid-October, when we need to put the pens down and start picking up the phones. Great to be with everybody today.
Yes, indeed. And indefatigable is a worthy epithet for you. My goodness. We have also with us today, thespian, journalist, social activist, and wielder of the sword of feminism, Susan McCabe.
Good morning. Happy to be here and excited about our conversation today. It's going to be big.
Lots of interesting topics and a great contribution from our next person in terms of topics. I was very pleased to see what the things that she brought up. Is social worker, former professor, and former athlete, although I don't know if any of us jocks ever think of ourselves as former athletes. In the background, previously uprooted to Georgia, and now back in the land of the fur and Madrona, Lynn Kerrigan.
Hi, good morning. And you're right. You know, I am always trying to get a game together of one kind or another. I think once sports infects you and you kind of learn to play as a team and you learn how wonderful and terrifying that can be, there's kind of nothing better. I think that's why Brian chose me to come on the team. He interviewed me over lunch one day, and I found I'd played shortstop as a kid, and that was all that it took. Somehow baseball. That trumped all the 30 years of social work and teaching. I was okay because I knew how to play ball, and I know what that means.
Absolutely. That's great. And for the benefit of our listener, I will mention, too, that Lynn is a fierce competitor at bocce ball played in the yard.
There, see, once an athlete, always an athlete.
You can't take the athlete out of us. We have, I was going to say, our professor emeritus of history, he who keeps a rein on my flights into less than 100% accurate historical references, and guardian of the galaxy, and yet I do not see him.
Oh, sorry, I got a note from him, Michael. He said that his internet is down, that Comcast is on the scene, and they are working to fix it. But
may yet see, yeah, Bruce Allman.
Yeah, we think he's probably not going to make it. But
oh, rats! Well, yeah, we'll forge ahead and do our best.
The internet's struggling right now, isn't it? That's why I'm in the studio with Truman.
Hey, well, there you are.
He is unguarded.
So yes,
So listen, since Bruce is not going to be able to introduce himself, I have something really important that I need to throw out, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Just take a minute.
Could you tell our listener who you are, since we
go, Michael.
The voice you have been hearing
yes.
is the voice of the steady hand at the helm of the VOVS, the good ship voice of Vashon, our sound engineer and Captain Zoomology, Truman O'Brien. Go ahead, Truman.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. Hey, listen, the Vashon Health Care District will provide an online progress report to the community at a special meeting of the Board of Commissioners on Wednesday. That's tomorrow, September 30th at 7 p.m. The agenda will include reports by each commissioner about what the district has been doing to maintain and improve health care on Vashon since being elected almost a year ago. There will be a Zoom login. If you go to vashonhealthcare.org, there will be instructions there on how to log in, and there will be a Q&A at the end. And if you would please submit your questions on the website prior to the meeting, they would appreciate that. Once again, it's the vashonhealthcare.org, and that meeting is tomorrow night at 7 p.m.
Excellent.
Thanks, Truman. That's really important.
You bet.
Indeed. I'm your host, Michael Shook, ensconced here in what passes for an office. We have a whole bunch of topics today, as we always do. We know now who President Trump has formally nominated to fill the seat of the Supreme Court, vacated by the death of the notorious RBG. And the wonderful RBG, I might add, notorious in the sense of all kinds of good things. And that is, I'm going to go ahead and say Mrs. Amy Coney Barrett, because I think she would probably be fine with being called Mrs. Her middle name is a vernacular term for the a small rodent-like mammal found throughout the world in North Africa and the Middle East, as well as distributed broadly throughout the montane regions of North and South America and Asia. And that is the hyrax and the pica. And it is also an archaic term from whence we get the name of Coney Island, an old term for rabbit. Now, I'm not sure if that has anything to do with anything.
You know, that Michael completely would have escaped my attention without the services of the Brown Briefly. People would never probably have really delved into the background.
The etymology of her name. Exactly.
Yes, yeah. There you go. So
let's just call her Bunny.
Oh, that's bad.
There Susan. You go, Susan. We're there.
Yes. See, there. This. Oh, I love it. Oh, my goodness. That's brilliant. Will, what are the thoughts of the Brieflys about this pick?
I got one quick thing. Did any of you see, and I'm trying to remember who wrote it now, darn it, but advice to the committee that's going to be interviewing her? They said, leave her background alone, leave the religion alone, leave all of that alone. What you do is you ask her, do you think that the interference of President Trump in, you know, da 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 is against the law? And, you know, anyway, all of these things that he's done in the last 3.5 years to hit her with each one of those, do you think that's legal? Do you think that's legal? What is your opinion of that? How do you feel about all the way through? And rather than indicting her on her background, indict her on her beliefs. I think that is a brilliant, brilliant strategy.
That makes a lot of sense to me. It basically put her up against the wall regarding legal issues, particularly as they pertain to the president.
Exactly.
Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense.
The whole thing about the Emoluments Clause. And they say, you know, she's a lovely person. Don't attack her personally because, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. But
right. That would be a losing strategy.
Exactly.
That's good to know.
Don't beat up on Bunny.
That's right.
No one's going to stand for that. That's just, you can't, there's the image. That's interesting, and I think I second that or third it. That's a very wise mm-hmm. approach, and I it's my heart's desire that any judge, whether for a circuit court or for a local municipal court or a Supreme Court, would be questioned upon what is your view of jurisprudence? How do you interpret these things? How do you look at this? And I do say interpret because I think there's a real disingenuous kind of thing that goes on with the strict originalists and the constitutionalists. It's I want someone to say, folks, come on, words are metaphors. We have to interpret what a certain sentence means or a word means. That's part of being a judge. To say that that doesn't come into play seems ridiculous.
And the other thing I think about, Michael, related to that is that the whole idea of a Supreme Court, you know, position being there to cement conservative values, and in particular with the argument of Roe versus Wade, there's been a lot of discussion about should we be setting ourselves up for more Supreme Court decisions that the Americans defaulting to the courts. They're already setting us up for a huge Supreme Court readiness to call this election, you know, in the case of various miscreants. And so to be so boldly obvious that we're going to stack the court and mm-hmm. make sure, regardless of our hypocrisy, that we have, you know, a lopsided, supposedly conservative-leaning Supreme Court, to me seems not only craven and hypocritical, but so baldly obvious as a power play that I hope Americans are not losing their sense of smell to the coronavirus, but that can smell the odoriferousness in the planning of trying to cover every option should Trump lose the popular vote. Yeah. They're even talking about going straight to the Electoral College vote on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just strange, mm-hmm. bald grabs for power. And I'm ashamed by what the Republicans are doing myself. And I hope that the country can see through
that?
It.
Going to the straight to the electoral college on the floor. You mean the Senate floor? What exactly does that mean?
Calling. I don't know that I could articulate it better. If you give me a moment, I brought in some of the articles that I've been reading that talk more about that, and I'll explain it and cite it. But basically, what they're saying is that the polls show that Trump is so far behind in the electoral popular votes that it may be to his advantage to have someone, and I don't know how this works, not call for a popular vote at the election, but go straight to the Electoral College. So I think that what they're talking about is circumventing the electoral ballots and going straight to the court in the convention. Is that how people read that?
You know, there's a couple of specific threats that I've heard about, and one of them is at the state level. And Lynn, it's certainly multiple jurisdictions come into play depending on where we're at in the process. But in terms of submitting a slate of electors to the Electoral College, this is where state governments play a role. And if there's an assertion by, say, a Republican-controlled state governor or a state legislator that, you know, we counted the ballots on election night, all these other ballots are fraudulent, let's just quit counting now. And or they're fraudulent ballots, and we need to elect a set of electors who represent our state's interests given the fraudulent nature of these ballots. So let's ignore those ballots. And let's elect people to go to the Electoral College and cast their votes because we know they have the best interests of our state in mind. And of course, you can see the possibility of problems there. The other case is, I believe, if neither candidate gets 270 Electoral College votes, then the Congress takes over with their processes to determine who is the actual president. There's some other scenarios which kind of get the Congress involved, and I'd have to go look at those details myself. But yeah, it's a very circuitous path, and there's a lot of history doesn't support us here because we haven't really gone down this path before. So we might be making up stuff as we go.
Thanks for that. Kevin, I really appreciate your clarity. Does anybody else have anything to add to try to be more specific than my general dog whistle?
Well, I was just looking up which states have chosen to accept the popular vote over the Electoral College vote. And there are, let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 states, including our own.
I was thinking it was 17, but go ahead.
Well, it may be. There may be one that's been added since this was written. But that's, it says, these are the states that whose collective electoral votes represent a majority in the Electoral College. That doesn't tell me anything, but it looks as though there are 16 or 17 states that have chosen to accept the popular vote over the Electoral College vote. And I wonder how or if that would have any impact on somebody's idea that we should go right to the Electoral College.
There is, I'm trying to think of the name of the coalition or whatever that it's called that this represents. And basically,
National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
Thank you. That's the one.
Nice. Yeah, thank you.
That's the one.
I believe that's what you're referring to.
It is. It is.
I'm not sure if it applies.
Right. And but what happens there is obviously that their electors have to vote by whatever the national popular vote is, and so they
popular vote.
The national popular vote, not the state. So if they, I mean, and there 17 or more states have signed on to that pact.
I think the other point I was trying to make, just to kind of be clear of what that rambling rant was all about, had to do with the idea that we are actually expecting problems at the polls this year, whether it's voter suppression, intimidation, some kind of fights after the results are known. That I think what I'm saying is that we have been suckered into thinking that the Supreme Court should be deciding this because there will be problems at the ballot box. And I guess I want to say that is not a given to me. That is, seems like a very alarmist and very disinformation, intimidation to going out to the ballots to have it promoted that there will be riots at the ballot boxes, which Trump and his campaign have spread. And so my point had to do with the kind of disruption that's happening right now and the panic that's happening in our country.
Well, and I think we need to be careful about that may not be that widespread. I don't think we could say that it's a panic. I think I've read plenty of things that indicate the Republicans are going to, you know, pull out the stops and try to intimidate voters and things like that. But there's an enormous number of people who are determined, you know, to counter that and to vote. And I think it's important to remember that, as Bruce would say, Trump's support is still a minority. I think it's also important to keep in mind that we don't want to, I don't want to be too cynical, but we don't want to give them too much credit for being, quote, good. We vote. It's the old pothole politics. It's the old, what have you done for me lately? And that's really the basis of a lot of how people vote. I read in the paper this morning about an undecided voter who said, well, I don't like a lot of this stuff that's going on, but hey, my 401k went up 35% in the last 4 years. And so he's kind of leaning towards supporting Trump. So it's always about power, and it's just how are we going to wield this, and can, you know, don't you think so? How can we keep the checks and balances in place? That's a big concern, Susan.
That makes me come to the question, two questions actually. When, yes, it is, politics is personal. What have you done for me lately? So with that in mind, how do you think the news of Trump's tax evasion is going to affect voter turnout or voter disposition? And the other thing that comes to mind is, and I'll try to be brief about this, my grandson is a senior at Vashon High School and involved in government. He's the co-president of the school, of the student government. And he called me last night to interview me about politics and government for a class that he is taking. So I'm thrilled to know they're teaching government at Vashon High School. But one of the big questions he kept going for was, how does the government's action affect me personally? How do the government's actions affect me personally? Which brings me to that question of, what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. Who am I going to vote for, who's going to serve my needs? And where do we as a team here think that that Trump's tax evasion is going to impact that, and how?
All right. So I, as you all know, I have a number of friends that are very, very strong Trump supporters. And I know that their response to this is going to be fake news, first of all. That's the first response. The second response is going to be, well, gosh, he was really smart. He just used all the things that were available, you know, to get out of paying taxes. I mean, those are the two big things. And so what's the big deal?
Well, you know? May I speak to that? Because, Truman, I think that you're exactly right about the response to that question nationally. But what I found interesting, even on the front pages of the Seattle Times this last weekend, there were two articles about the debate, and there have been articles about Trump's tax evasion, and nobody putting together the article that was on the business page of the front page, or the front page of the business section this morning in the Seattle Times, that talked about the tax system and how inequality in wealth has really increased over these last 4 years. When the stock market goes up, you know, the wealthy get richer, and not that many Americans, even though they may have 401ks, are actually active in the actual stock market with independent stocks. So they don't get wealthier. And so our system is indeed tax structured to support people's using their capital and preventing, you know, a whole lot of taxes and all of that. It's the way I felt when I finally got to buy a house and thought, I am finally a landed gentry. I get to deduct my mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the system is designed to protect wealth. We really need to grapple with that. And the tax system has been looked at several times about how it could be more equitable to more people. And to me, that's what is at risk here. It's not just what one person is evading his taxes and being unfit for the presidency, which, you know, is my opinion, but that the tax system, if it stays the way it is right now without any reform, is going to continue to benefit the wealthy at the expense of the middle class, not to mention the poor.
Well, unfortunately, the foxes are watching the hen house. And it's the landed gentry in Congress and in the Senate, particularly the Senate, who are passing the laws that maintain the current taxing structure. My other question then becomes, with Trump $300 million in debt, he is a national security risk. I think Heather Cox Richardson wrote today that the average person who has even a small debt cannot get a security clearance because they are susceptible to blackmail. With $300 million in debt, is there anybody in law enforcement or in government who can say, hey, he can't be president with that kind of debt, Kevin?
You know, it's really intriguing you raise the debt issue. You know, I've filled out a lot of SF-86s in my career. If you want to look that up, you'll find out what that means. But it was intriguing that things like owning property in Canada, for example, would like a major red flag for people getting a security clearance.
Really?
And look at what properties Trump owns. And not to mention, you know, the questionable finances and the ability to be in a position of being blackmailed. Those are all super red, dark red flags. And those, of course, cannot be invoked when you're talking about the president of the United States.
They cannot?
They cannot. He has to have access to that data, given the fact that he's the president of our country, and we have an entire group of intelligence activists who report to him. And so, somebody has to receive that information. You cannot pull the president's clearance. It just, our democracy would go into a whole new set of conundrums, if that were the case.
And gee, I wonder if this has anything to do with how cozy he is to Putin and the Ross Bank and all of the other people that have given him loans. So connect the dots, people. Not to mention that the debate isn't even covering climate change. That has not been a question that was turned in to Chris Wallace, which just blows my mind. I don't know what planet people are living on if they can't see some of this corruption.
I've been living on this one very long.
So I did want to mention, Susan, that the risk is very severe. There's no doubt about that. But pulling the president's clearance is just a whole different chapter. And that raises a whole lot of other concerns.
Truman, what?
I just wanted to say, did anyone see the two-part series, the Comey Rule, that recently aired?
Not yet.
No.
Sunday night and last night.
I read about it, yeah.
Very interesting. Brendan Gleeson played Trump, and I'm just going blank for a moment. Anyway, the guy that played Comey was very, very good.
It was one of the Johns, wasn't it?
Oh, I'll get it.
John Hurd?
No.
It was what's his name?
Oh, drives me crazy.
That guy.
I really like the guy. He's
Jeff Daniels?
Jeff Daniels. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Is that on Netflix?
It may be. I think we saw it on Showtime. It was available there. But
here's the thing that's frustrating to me is that we know he's corrupt. It's anybody who'd been paying any attention at all was aware of this back in 2016 and even before that. I mean, the guy has talked to anybody who's lived in New York and had to deal with his real estate shenanigans and that kind of things. And in New Jersey, it's frustrating to me in a way that it just doesn't seem to matter to a lot of people. So this is where I kind of come back to saying, well, this is just how humans roll. Kevin.
So let me share some insight into what is being done. These are all tremendous risks that we face. And it's mortifying and puts us in a panic in some cases and moves us to inaction in some cases. But there are over 100 national groups who are aligned as partners behind something called Protect the Results. And what is going to happen during any of these crises that we've talked about is people will be notified of what's going on and how to react and respond. Another group is Choose Democracy. You can sign up for both of those. Go check those out on the internet. Protect the Results and Choose Democracy. In King County, just one example, is Indivisible groups have set up ballot box monitors for every ballot box in King County. We as a group of Washington State Indivisibles are looking at what are the regulations surrounding what you can and cannot do to intimidate voters at a ballot box. And who do you call? And there are some jurisdictions that people have frankly said that, you know, our sheriff is very aligned with the alt-right. Their statements have indicated that that's their preference. So do you call them if the Proud Boys show up? So, you know, these are all things that are of considerable concern. But the other thing people need to know is they're being addressed, and they're being addressed by cool-headed folks before the crises hit. We still have another month, and people are really working and putting together. There's actually a task force locally meeting this Friday to kind of kick off and how do we work together across the state to not only manage issues that might happen here locally, but what can we do to be supportive of other jurisdictions that are more battleground states that are really even more vulnerable to the things that are coming out now. And we definitely, the biggest mitigation is to turn out the vote. The big vote and the big blue wave in 2020 means most of these risks go away. And so that's what we're really encouraging people. Sign up for Protect the Results, Choose Democracy, keep building a blue wave, and be ready after November 3rd to take action.
There you go. And there I'm reminded of the quote from, I think, Joan Baez, the antidote to despair is action. Well done there, Kevin and company there. Yes, vote. So that's great. Well, we've got some other things on the agenda here that kind of tie in together in some ways. Well, the verdict in the Breonna Taylor shooting was upsetting to a lot of people and set off a whole series of demonstrations and things. The underlying cause of that debacle, I think, certainly is rooted in racism. We all know the statistics on that African Americans are targeted in different ways than whites are. We all know the disproportionate numbers of people in jail and all of that. But it seems to me that I'm concerned about where we've gotten to as a society, that this is how we deem police practices should be. It seems to me like it's a deeper problem that we need to address. It's not just the racism, though we need to address that, but it's what are we asking police to do?
You know, Michael,
and how are we asking them to do it?
I think, you know, the racism bug in our mix of tossed salad in America is so profound. And the thing that I am remembering being old is in 1968, when the law and order terms of, I guess, Nixon in reaction to some of the riots after Rodney King's beating. I'm just remembering the slow militarization of the police, which quit being so much about the general protection of all of our citizens and somehow got politicized and turned against people of color who were protesting at that time. And it has only gotten more and more militaristic in the sense of their hardware, their procedures. I don't believe that a military approach to policing is the answer. I look for public patrols and the police serving all of us. And I don't know how we go back, and if not forward, and figure out a way that the police can see themselves as protecting everyone.
Yeah, Susan, what do you?
Well, I think, Lynn, you just proffered the definition of a police state, which is what we have become.
Yeah.
We are a police state. The police have almost unbridled authority to abuse citizens, whether they be of color, whatever color, and white is a color, we might be. The police have pretty much free rein to act. I think the Breonna Taylor case is challenging that. And the a member of the grand jury who oversaw the case has filed a motion asking the judge to release the grand jury proceedings,
yes,
suggesting that the public statements of the Kentucky Attorney General contradict the evidence the grand jury saw. So they're still looking at that. Mm-hmm. And that is a challenge to the free reign of police, but that is a drop in the bucket. as to what we are seeing that starts with how police are recruited. Mm-hmm. They're not tested for psychological control. In my mind, anybody who wants to carry a gun is somebody who should not be a cop.
And their training is very short, you know, so that's the second part of it for me. And their oversight is very limited, given the role of the police unions and the degradation of the citizens' oversight panels that have been put into play toward that. So we've got a lot of work to do in this arena.
It's fascinating to me how that's unfolded, because in various countries it can take up to 4 years to become a police officer. You have extensive training in not just firearms, which is an awful huge emphasis in America, but in psychology and tactics and communities. It's interesting. It seems like it's been a long road the way that we got here, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we are hitting a turning point. As Bruce has reminded us, in a pandemic, there is such a disruption of society that we enter a kind of a space where a lot of things can change. And I'm really hopeful that this is what we're seeing is this change. Kevin.
Yeah, you know, so much of this goes to, I think, local jurisdictions and how they provide direction, instructions, training, and so on. And I think here, it's fascinating to me in Washington State. I believe that there are 7 Black women running for legislative office in the state of Washington.
Wow.
As we speak on our ballots mm-hmm. today. You can write postcards through postcardsforwashington.com to help get them elected. You know, we have seen this racism issue in our country forever, and policies have not been changing. We need to have people who have lived these lives understand the situation and can really vote their life and their conscience to make positive changes. Another thing happening is there was apparently a ballot measure that will appear in November, which will make the decision by us voters about whether our sheriff is now elected or appointed by the King County Council. That's our King County Sheriff. So look for that. Look into that. That's a path to redistributing the budget, because without the council having the direct control of the sheriff's office, they are also unable to control the budget, and it would be left in the way it is right now if we don't make this change. So there's changes going on locally at the state level and the county level, which I think are steps in the right direction. So we need to be diligent about moving forward.
Excellent. Susan, what?
Yeah, it seems to me that the whole mantra of defund the police has been misunderstood. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a great
clumsy term.
It's a clumsy term. Yes, it absolutely is. And it's really about refunding the police, redistributing the dollars that go to the actions that we ask police now to carry out, which is, it's at this point, it's kind of an old story, but people are resisting it because of that defund the police thing. We don't want to take away the protections that police provide, but we do want to allow for innocent citizens who are in need of help and support to get it in the proper ways when they need it in emergencies. And the police that we have now are not trained to do that. As we just mentioned, they're trained in arms, and they're trained in crowd control, and they're trained in combat. Well, you don't always need that.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the good number of them, literally. I'm really pleased to hear what you mentioned there, Kevin, about the number of candidates, Black women running for these offices. And it's kind of astonishing to me, because let's face it, folks, the tri-states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, are three of the whitest states in the whole country. I mean, we're white. We're really white. Kevin, what do you have to?
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, let me make a quick computer adjustment I have to make. So one of those women candidates I've been doing a lot of phone banking with, and the awesome thing is that the candidate is there with you on Zoom making phone calls, right?
Wow.
And
who is that?
It's Joyce Stanford, who's in the 26th legislative district that lies between Port Orchard and Gig Harbor. And she's phone banking now every day of the week except for Saturday. Joy came over to Vashon not too long ago. She was offered some these stanchions that hold up the yard signs, which she's putting out all over the place. And I asked her, so how was your trip to Vashon? Because I wasn't able to meet her at that time. And she says, you know, it was a amazing experience in that, you know, Vashon is one of the places that I've been where I didn't feel that I was being watched all the time, everything that they did. I didn't get the look. And she went on to talk about how she has two sons, one in spending time now around Idaho, I think in the McCall area or nearby, and another in Chicago. And she just recounted her daily fears about their safety.
Yeah.
And how, you know, we don't see that, right? We don't live that every day. We don't have people like looking at us when we walk in the store about whether we're going to do something nefarious. We don't have to worry about our children, whether they can make it through the day. Spending time listening and understanding this depth of concern is so important for us to understand and to support. So I feel that is an investment worth making.
And I think it asks some very important things of us. I don't want to eat in too much to our 3 minutes remaining, but I do want to say there was a fabulous article, a disturbing article, in the New York Times Magazine, this last issue on, get the date here, I can't.
Was that about the segregated housing?
The 27th, yeah. It's called White Hoods, written by a guy named Matthew Desmond. And he's talking about, you know, we can't make this about the other in some way. We can't say Trump is the racist and the police are militarized and make it not about whites looking at our own holding on to power. And this article talked about how rabidly segregated our neighborhoods remain all over this country, and all the banking practices and affordable and fair housing acts seem to not affect that. So we have some big questions to ask ourselves, so that we are priming ourselves to figure out how to share in this country without feeling robbed and without it being a battle. It's a big question, and I think it's the heart of what needs to be asked in this country.
Well,
and I remember you making that sort of personal and saying it's a question we on Vashon need to ask. Why is Vashon so white?
Yeah.
Whitest place in King County.
Yeah.
It is the whitest and oldest population in King County, which is saying something.
<That's>, couple things. Yeah.
Strokes his white beard.
Yeah. So we're protected by this bubble, and may we use this privilege of being safe to examine all of this really well.
I think that's exactly what Kevin is doing there. And I at the risk of going all spiritual on us, I honestly feel like our nation has been so materialistic for so long, for the last 80 years or so. Each of us somehow has a responsibility to dig a little deeper, I think, and I'm being preachy, but dig a little deeper and find that commonality of humanness. We're all, when you take away the skin, when you take away the income and all the other stuff, we all are pretty much want the same thing, a chance at building a life for ourselves. And we got to start taking better care of ourselves or we're all going to just go down.
Not well, and yet. How do we define a good life? I think that is something to look at. Is a good life an upper middle class existence that consumes everything around it. That's what is consuming our planet right now.
Yeah.
We need to redefine a good life.